Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Episode 89, El Coronado and the Search for the Cities of Gold, Part 3. I wonder what El Coronado was thinking as he sat in Cibola, realizing that the rumors of riches which had brought him there were untrue, sending soldiers out to explore the surrounding land, and having them come back with no sign of wealth to be found anywhere nearby. He was in an arid place with little agricultural potential. A small indigenous population, and far from the coast, which could link it to the existing colonies to the south. In short, where he was had little to offer, and the whole thing must have felt like a waste of time. He could claim the area, and be put in charge of it. But what then? We can't know for sure, but I suspect he was pretty fed up, and wondering how he would keep the men who had enlisted to come with him happy. He had borrowed money, and he was probably wondering how he was going to pay it back with the lack of economic potential this land had for him. Perhaps this is why he was so willing to believe in the existence of another city of riches, previously unheard of, somewhere to the northeast. The men who arrived to meet him in Cibola were not from this city. They were from a place called Tiguex, a collection of towns and villages close to where Albuquerque is today. They did, however, know of someone who was said to be from there. Tiguex was home to many different groups of people, but they all shared similar belief systems and ways of life, so they are usually grouped together as the Puebloans. It was the Spanish who gave them this name. Pueblo means village or people, and it refers to the adobe settlements they lived in. The Zuni in Cibola are also considered part of the Pueblo group. Coronado agreed to send a small group of men to visit their settlement and to investigate further. The people of Tiguex kept slaves, and two of these were from a city on the plains, where not only was the land greener and populated with buffalo, making it much more hospitable, but there existed the mythical city, Kivaria, which was said to be ruled by a great chief and full of gold and silver. The first of these two men was called Sopote. We don't know the real name of the second. The Spanish thought that he looked like he could have been one of the Muslim peoples who they had spent centuries fighting back home, and so they gave him the nickname the Turk. Because we have no other name for him, this is how he is referred to in all the accounts. It's the one that we will have to use as well. It would be interesting to sit down with these two and try and understand their motivations. Spanish accounts paint them as two foils, telling conflicting stories. Sopote apparently denied the existence of a city of gold, but it seems that he was not listened to, until much later when it became obvious that he was telling the truth. The Turk seems to have been the one who pushed the story. He has been interpreted as a brave indigenous hero by some. The reasoning is that he took it upon himself to lead the Spanish on a long wild goose chase around the plains so that they would eventually give up, leaving the indigenous peoples of the area to live in peace. Doing this was a brave feat, as it involved putting himself at personal risk in the company of these aggressive outsiders for an extended period of time. It's impossible to really say, as all we have to go on are the Spanish accounts written after the fact, with all their biases and their desire to explain what had happened. There are a couple of things we should consider when speculating about this. Firstly, we should take into account the fact that their conversations would have been mangled through translators, and largely made up of gestures. The indigenous people would never have heard Spanish before, and vice versa. How much of the local language would an interpreter brought from Mexico understand? It's possible that the Spanish heard what they wanted to hear from the Turk, rather than what he was actually telling them. As I mentioned, I personally think that De Coronado and his men would have been pretty disappointed with what they'd found so far. Perhaps they were desperate to believe that there was something more promising around the corner. They say that the leader of Tigwex had a gold bracelet, which the Turk told them had arrived there with him. Even if this was correctly understood and true, they never actually found it. One bracelet isn't much to base a whole belief in a city constructed from the stuff on. The other thing which raises some questions to me is the Turk's slave status. If he was actually feeding the Spanish stories about riches, perhaps he was doing so as a way to escape his captors. They will actually reach Quivira, and if he wasn't trying to get home, but leading the Spaniards on a long journey to distract them, why would he take them to his home? And why would he want to protect the people who had enslaved him? It is all speculative. There is no definitive answer to be found when it comes to motivations and thought processes. All we can really do is recount what happened. The Spanish captain who spoke to Sopote and the Turk was satisfied that he had a lead worth pursuing, and he sent for Coronado to come up to Tigwex with the rest of the soldiers. The land there was better than they'd seen in the rest of the desert, being watered by the Rio Grande, and apparently planted with fields of corn. The Spanish, though, didn't intend to take it and make it a base for their new viceroyalty. They wanted to continue onwards. Conquer it they did, though. They had been invited there, but they soon proved to be bad guests. They began by trying to locate the gold bracelet from the delegation who had arrived in Cibola, and to do this they used torture and force. As winter arrived, the Spanish were still under-equipped, and they went about taking clothing and blankets from the local people. The abuses continued and got worse, until they provoked the people to take up arms and drive the Spanish out. What followed is referred to by historians as the Tigwex War. It lasted about 4 months. 12 of the indigenous villagers took part. Perhaps between them they could gather 600 or 700 soldiers. The Spanish had their usual advantages of armour, guns and horses, and there were about 350 of them. Even without these, however, they would have been in a favourable position. They had with them around 2,000 indigenous Mexicans. The Puebloans began by attacking livestock pens and setting the Spanish animals free, as being mounted on horses was one of the Spanish military advantages. The idea was probably to negate this. The Spanish surrounded this village and then attacked it, and they took it quite easily. Their tactics were not to take any prisoners, as they wanted to scare the other villagers out of joining the fight. When many of the Puebloans did surrender, they accepted this, but then they massacred them. They burnt the village as well, so many of those not fighting were also killed. Over the next few months, the Spanish did the same to most of the rest of the villages. They found them empty, however, as the populations had all taken refuge together in the largest and most fortified one, a place named Mojo. When the Spanish came to it, they shouted for the defenders to surrender, and the Puebloan leader decided to try to take advantage of this. He said that he wanted to come down and negotiate, but when he was face to face with the Spanish commander, he attacked. Whether he expected to survive this is unknown, but it seemed that he was at least going to take the commander out until the guards quickly rushed in and pulled him away. The rest of the defenders started shooting with bows and arrows at exactly the same moment, and they seemed to have taken the Spanish completely by surprise. The attackers were forced to retreat temporarily. The defenders made the mistake of coming out and trying to fight the Spanish, losing the advantage of their fortifications. The Spanish pretended to run away, which caused the Puebloans to split apart as they chased them, and this made them easier targets when the Spanish turned around again to fight. They won this battle, but many of the defenders made it back to the village. It proved very well fortified, and the Spanish couldn't force their way in, so they were obliged to wait the defenders out. Luckily for them, there was no source of water inside the village, and this is what eventually forced the defenders out after about 50 days. They attempted to break out at night, but they were spotted, and the result was a massacre. There was one last remaining village which was also being besieged, but it fell soon afterwards. As I said, Coronado probably didn't want to get caught up in this conflict. He wanted to go look for the new city of gold. When his behaviour forced it to happen, however, he went about it with extreme brutality. You might remember that on the way up through Mexico, he had enforced a policy of relative good treatment. So clearly after the disappointment of Cibola, he had abandoned this.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now that the brief war was over, he set about doing what he really had in mind, searching for Quivira. Some of you listening will know the geography of these places much better than I do. I've never been to the USA, let alone the areas Coronado went to. I know the basics, and I've seen films and pictures set in these landscapes, but their scale still seems incredible. They must have been even more so at a time when only the indigenous peoples occupied them. The Turk led Coronado to the northeast, and gradually the Orange Desert gave way to the Great Plains. As best as we can tell, his route will take him across the far north of Texas, what I think you call the Panhandle in the USA, and then the thin bit of Oklahoma, which sticks out to the west of the state, and I think is also called a Panhandle. Finally, they will go into Kansas. Historians have reconstructed this route based on the Spanish accounts, and by trying to match their descriptions of the indigenous people they met with what we know about how they live today. As I was writing this, I received an email from a listener, Kevin Woodruff, who brought a recent piece of research to my attention. Having been published on literally the day I was writing, it couldn't have been any more timely. The article outlines the work of an anthropologist named Matthew Boulanger, who has studied a single obsidian blade which was found back in the 1930s by a man who grew up on a ranch in northern Texas. The man's daughter-in-law brought it to Belanger's attention, who studied it and determined that it had its origin in central Mexico. Examining the possibilities that this was either a hoax or that it had made its way north through trade, but concluding that neither possibility seemed the most likely, Belanger suggests that the blade was probably dropped by someone on De Coronado's expedition. This allows us to plot the route with more accuracy. So thank you to Kevin for bringing this research to my attention. I will put a link to the article in the episode description. It contains a useful map of what is believed to be Coronado's route. Part of the reason it gets more difficult to accurately map where he went when he left Tiguex is the geography he was about to enter and the lifestyle of the peoples who lived there. This is the beginning of the Great Plains, and Spanish accounts reveal their bewilderment at the size and featurelessness of them. There were no hills or natural features which could be used to navigate, and many of the indigenous people moved around rather than living in permanent villages. This ruled settlements out as navigational tools as well. The Spanish describe it like a sea, and seem to have found it intimidating. They say that even their guides got confused and lost, because there was nothing to tell them if they were going in the right direction. Apparently one Spaniard went off a short distance to hunt for food, and he must have got lost because he was never seen again. They also describe seeing buffalo herds, and their astonishment at the number of the wild animals. At this point they came into contact with small nomadic groups of Apache, who followed the buffalo and lived off their meat. The rest of their supplies ran out, and so they copied the Apache, learning how to hunt the buffalo and eating little else. It was okay for the men themselves, but it wasn't good for the horses, and it was apparently common for more of their hunters to get lost for a day or two, before eventually finding their way back to the main group. After some time lost in this sea of grass, they reached a ravine and found people camped at its bottom. These people were enemies of those who lived in Quivira, and they were only too happy to tell the Spanish that they were close to their target. They had bad news to go with the good, though. They were confused by the Spanish questions about gold and riches, explaining that Quivira was a pretty nondescript village. Again, we only have the Spanish accounts to go on here, but according to them, Sopete butted in at this point to complain that this is what he'd been trying to tell them all along. Finally starting to believe him, they questioned the Turk, who they say admitted that he'd been deliberately misleading them the whole time. They had come so far. Even if this was true, they had to go and see for themselves. They marched onwards to discover that Quivira was not one city, but a collection of close villages inhabited by the same cultural group. These villages were made up of thatched roof huts, not the grand stone buildings they had hoped for. The leader of Quivira came out to meet them, and the only piece of metal he wore was a copper pendant. There were no riches to be found here. The Spanish stayed for a little while, but they were nervous because the population here was quite large. The number of warriors they might be able to raise outnumbered them significantly. That population seemed to be growing increasingly unhappy with their presence. The accounts say that the Turk tried to persuade the Quivirians to attack the Spanish, and this would make sense, as they had now put him in chains for misleading them. Soon they killed him as punishment for what they say was his dishonesty, but they let Sopete remain there because he had told them the truth. Things had worked out quite well for him. He had started the story as a slave in a distant land, and ended up free again amongst his own people. What's more, the Spanish left those people alone. They finally gave up chasing imaginary riches, and started the long trek back to Mexico. Coronado's expedition had yielded nothing. Besides the lack of gold, they had also found nowhere which could be colonized. Coronado concluded that the best place to attempt to build a new colony was Tiguex, but even this was so isolated from Mexico and the coast that it would be difficult to maintain, and the ecological conditions there weren't exactly great. He had left a few men there to start a settlement, but while he'd been in Quivira, they had struggled to survive. What's more, news reached them that the other settlement they had left people to build in northern Mexico had been attacked by the local indigenous people, because those Spaniards had been overly harsh with their treatment. When they got back to Tiguex, Coronado decided to have a horse race against another Spaniard, but he fell off and was trampled by the other man's horse. He was apparently seriously injured, and they had to spend the whole winter there while he recovered. Some of the expedition members have written that Coronado's personality changed around this point. He became suspicious, withdrawn, and depressed. Some speculate that the head injury had something to do with it, although the realization that his expedition had been a complete failure would probably have been enough to provoke this on its own. When the weather improved, they made the journey back to Mexico City. One priest decided to stay because he wanted to convert the people of Quivira to Christianity. It's thought that he was killed after a year or two. The march back was largely uneventful. Coronado had to account for the failure of his expedition and deal with the debts he now owed to the people who'd funded it. He held on to his position as governor of New Galicia for a couple of years, but he was removed and charged with what I guess you would call the equivalent of war crimes for the events of the Tigwex War. He still had connections in Mexico, including among those who were overseeing these charges. This meant that in the end he was never punished. His second-in-command, however, wasn't as lucky. He had been directly responsible for a lot of the worst actions. He was found guilty for this back in Spain. Coronado lived for another 10 years in Mexico City and didn't really do anything else of note. It's said that he died in relative poverty, although I'm sure he wasn't exactly living like a peasant. Northern Mexico and much of the southern and western parts of the USA will become part of the Spanish Empire eventually, but that won't be for a while. For now, Coronado's expedition was an outlier, which achieved nothing as far as the Spanish were concerned. If you've enjoyed this episode and the podcast as a whole, and you feel like being generous and doing something to help, one thing you can do is leave a review wherever you get your podcast from. It really helps new people discover the show and means that it can grow. If you really, really enjoyed it and you're feeling very generous, another thing you can do is leave a donation. This helps cover the costs of running the show. There's information about how to do this in the episode description. Thanks to everyone who's already done this. And thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Latin American History Podcast, written and recorded by Max Sargent. For more information, visit the website www.maxsargent.com/thehistoryoflatinamerica. And that's spelt MaxSergeant. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to get in contact at historyoflatinamericapodcast@gmail.com. You can also find the Facebook page by searching for the Latin American History Podcast. The Twitter handle is @historylatinam, and if you've liked the show, you can help out by leaving a review on iTunes. Alternatively, if you visit the website, you'll see that each episode is accompanied by relevant photos. Most of these are my own, taken during my time in Latin America. All these photos and more are available to purchase as prints at my Etsy shop. You can find this at www.etsy.com/maxsargentphoto. That's spelt www.etsy.com/maxsergeant. Thanks for listening.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.